waiting a second one. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We do have quorum. We do have quorum, but I don't think that we, and I could be wrong, I don't think we can vote on the minutes, because we could if I had been at the last meeting.
I see.
But I was not at the last meeting. So I think we have to have a motion to...
postpone
the meeting.
I'll make a motion to postpone adopting the minutes.
Okay. So we are going to postpone the approving the minutes until next meeting. Okay. So, next on the agenda is, Chris, would you like to submit?
Yes.
Thank you.
We have three resolutions. The first one is the Kingston Center roof replacement. This has been discussed for quite some time. The Kingston Center has some problems with a roof that leaks. A couple of months ago, there was a leak that damaged one of the classrooms. So we want to be able to repair it and put it in good condition. The cost for the repair is $130,000. I believe you have the information broken down into architectural service and capital equipment. So we would just like your approval to move forward with repairing the Kingston roof.
Okay, so why don't we just do we have a motion to
discuss? I guess
to discuss it, yeah.
Yeah, I was just
and a second.
Yeah, I was just wondering. In the $9 million renovation that they did they not do the roofing?
My understanding was that it was part of it, but it was due to some budgetary constraints. This is what I understand. It was just got pushed out into the later years, and now we're going back to finish that off.
Okay. So, and is there any particular changes to the type of roof? I didn't actually see details.
No, it's I believe a standard regular black tar and the rubber.
EPDM.
No, nothing special about that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you already? They already did the architectural services, or?
I believe that has been bidded out. It's just a question now, just waiting for final approval. Actually, no, I take it back. I don't believe it has been bid out. We're waiting for approval before we go to it.
I
believe that you had asked something about whether or not the white roof was usable.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, people are making roofs lighter. And I know that there are materials that they can use to make them
right,
more of a lead level.
We can look into that. I remember you had asked about that called the Duet with our library here. Right?
Yeah.
So we can look into that. I don't know the discussion. I remember in asking about this, I know the answer to the first question about why now. But in terms of the details and the specifics of it, I don't know if it has been discussed regarding more environmentally friendly
roofing material
or not.
Well, I mean, I think just generally speaking, black is absorptive and lighter colors right. are more reflective, and that's a lead standard that, you know, even most basic.
I can make it a note to look into it. I know that with Kingston being on the forefront of our environmental effort, yeah. it probably has been discussed in the city, but I can't say that for sure.
Right, and the other question that we would normally ask is, with the county doing, you know, with any roof that we would do, is an opportunity for solar. Mm-hmm. So LEED is LEED in the caps, right? And just wondering if that can be looked into
sure.
as part of this project, because mm-hmm. once you redo the roof, especially EPDM, if you make any punctures in the EPDM and you've voided the warranty. So if you are using rubberized roofing, you have to think about integrating solar in while you're doing it. And if you're not, at least consider something that achieves a higher level of energy efficiency.
No, that makes sense. I agree with that. I'll look into those two and see where we are with that.
Okay.
Do we want to put this off before we approve it?
Well,
because I don't think it's going to be able to be changed once we approve it.
I'm willing to approve it. I would just hope that you can come back and answer this question.
Yeah, yeah. If you could just report on that next month, if they've at least looked into, like, if they're going to do the design in the RFP, they require from the architect
those specifications.
Okay. Great.
Any other discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
I'm a public works committee wannabe.
Okay, so is Pfeiffer Technology Lab the next
one? Right, the next one is the Pfeiffer Technology Innovation Lab.
Okay.
Now this one...
Go ahead. Sorry.
So this one has a little bit of history behind it. It was approved about a year ago. Originally, it was slated to be held off campus, but now that we've changed it to move it on campus, we're essentially able to save, see some savings because we've done that. We changed the scope of the project itself, which resulted in a revised cost estimate, which it's broken down here on the second page. Essentially, the construction has fallen to a little bit under $500,000. The equipment we've already bought, and so the original $1.4 million, I believe, that has been scaled back down to $864,000 and some change. Primarily, again, due to two reasons: the scope being narrowed down and moving from off campus. I forget the building; it was some industrial building in Kingston, from Kingston to onto the Stonebridge campus.
It's going to be in the old lab.
Yes, so in the Hardenburg, now building, we have two old labs which we will convert into the Pfeiffer Technology Innovation Center.
That
tour
was last year, and he showed us that they were thinking of using the space.
Yes,
what was the previous budget?
Yes,
am I supposed to?
No, it's okay.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I was remiss in pointing out is this project is fully funded by external sources.
And you already have the funding.
And we have the funding. It's all funded through one source of easy to track. I was just asking for your approval of the projects that we move forward. It's being managed by the county, but the county has no invested money in this.
Right. So what are the sources?
The main source is SUNY 2020. We have $600,000 money earmarked for that. We've also, through the foundation, had identified some additional external private individual funding. One is Darlene Pfeiffer. That's what the building's name after. So we have enough for the construction and for the equipment that's been identified here. That's why they even just need some change.
I believe Mr. Marks was with us too when we did the tour, and he was saying that if you see the equipment in there, it's really old. It's
about 40, 50 years old. It's around the time when this college was first built, so we're excited to get new equipment for that. And the president really is envisioning this center to be the centerpiece for the STEM program. This is what he wants to use to launch the STEM program and just make this one of the STEM campuses in the state.
Nice.
Great.
Yeah. Any other discussion?
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carried.
The last resolution is really just to alert this committee about an upcoming lease that the county and the college will be entering into. The college had vacated most of its premises from this, so BRC rather, to Kingston, and there is still one office, the SBDC, and a server room that's being housed in the BRC. So that will be the premise for the new lease that the college and the county will be entered into fairly soon. At the regular standard rate of $12.85 per square foot, which comes out to about a little bit under $22,000 for a mixture. That's our anticipated cost for the lease. So this is just to update the committee member here that we will be entering into a lease fairly soon for the county.
Okay, so this is resolution number 55.
55.
Right. Okay. Do anybody want to move it?
I'll move it.
Second?
Second. Whatever you want.
Okay, any other discussion? No? We'll take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, Resolution 55 is passed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Lee. Thank you, Chris.
We had our first board meeting for Cornell Cooperative Extension about 2 weeks ago. Good orientation for some new board members, and spent quite a bit of time talking about the succession plan that the board is putting in place to replace my position. I'll be retiring at the end of next January.
Wow. Well, it's good, no time like the present to plan for that.
We've been planning.
We've been around a while.
Yeah.
We've been planning. We actually got a grant from the Dyson Foundation, and hired a former employee, retiree, to come back and help lead the process. She's done a considerable amount of work. She interviewed all of the staff. She interviewed some community members, some legislators.
The board members.
What's that?
The board members.
All the board members put together a report. We have a draft position description, put it together, and a timeline. Goal is to hopefully have interviews in October, and the board's still determining whether they want or how much overlap between the new person coming on and me. I'm not planning on going anywhere, and I have told the board that I will do all that I can to make sure that this is a successful transition. I've spent quite a bit of time in this organization, and I want to make sure that it continues to thrive and grow and whatever.
It's going to be a hard act to follow.
Yes. Who is the person doing the study that you said?
Mary Marshers.
Oh, okay. And then new board members?
New board members, Chris from the Community College is one, and Lori Rotolo from Ellenville, or at least the Ellenville area, is one other. They elected new officers. Tim Wagner, who was our board president last year, is president again this year, and vice president is Barbara Caldwell, who works for SUNY New Pulse.
We have two board openings, right?
And we still have two board openings. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
And Chris is on the WebCo board, too.
Yep, which is great. Yeah. Which is great.
A little cross-communication.
A lot of cross-communications, yeah. Which is good.
That's good.
We are working with the Hudson Valley Lab, which is part of the Cornell Geneva Experiment Station, which is located in Highland, and Cornell Cooperative Extension. And a few other groups looking at putting in a CFA for modernizing that lab and building some educational facilities along with the lab, with the idea that we could work with the community college, local high schools, and SUNY New Paltz in providing internships for students who are interested in science, and having them actually work with the scientists who are doing the studies on agricultural practices. Mm-hmm. SUNY New Paltz has got an engineering school that's working on sustainability, so we see lots of tie-ins with that. There's always tie-ins with the community college. And local high schools as well. So it would be a major project and a major undertaking. That lab is really old. I was listening to them talking about the lab here.
It's right on 9W, right?
It's right on 9W. But that lab is experiencing some of the same problems that the other lab is. 50 years old. The equipment is old. Cornell has been pulling its support of the lab. They have been actually reviewing all of their holdings outside of the university, even within the university, and divesting themselves of most of them. The lab was on the list, but the lab property is actually owned by apple growers, and so is the lab. They rent it, the Cornell rents it from them to do the scientific work. So there is a farm next door that's for sale that would be really useful for being able to do additional experimentation and whatever, adding grapes and vegetables. Right now it's mostly a fruit lab. the land is really a, the work that we need done for agriculture in the Hudson Valley is highly dependent on what the lab does and what they find, especially when you're talking about integrated pest management and those kinds of things. The Hudson Valley tends to be a bellwether for the rest of the state. The stuff comes up on the jet stream, the insects, the funguses, those kinds of things and whatever. If we have to wait until they hit Ithaca or Geneva, they've already probably destroyed crops here. So we have a vested interest, I think, certainly in Ulster County agriculture and agriculture in the region, of getting that lab up to speed. And I think if we can do that, Cornell will support it more heavily. I can kind of see their point about them investing, you know, a lot of dollars into it. That plus the fact that there's a new tech school that's going in that Cornell is building in Manhattan, and we'd like to tie into the technology of that as well. So anyway, we're meeting with Suzanne Holt from Economic Development. She's agreed to actually host the meeting for us. Mary Marsters, who's working for us, who's got a lot of experience in this kind of thing, is kind of the coordinator. The lab's very interested. So we'll be having a meeting on that probably next week. So I think the CFA's got to be in April, May?
No, they announce in April or May, kind of June, July usually.
Right.
But no, it's no time at all.
It's huge. It's huge.
It's a lot of work.
So,
100 hours for it.
But I think it's a really good project. This would mostly be bricks and mortar, kind of one of those field of dream things. Build it and they'll come. We already have the base, but we'd be able to center the base there. Might even be that extension moves its operations down to that as well. We're really interested. We'd also like to put in a test kitchen for growers who would like to test recipes, you know, for greater production.
We need more processing.
Because we have, right, and processing and whatever.
Testing and processing.
So we used to have some facilities over in Poughkeepsie. I think those have closed down, so there's not a whole lot anymore. And we have a lot of agriculture in the region. So it's a regional lab already. We work with agriculture in Ulster County. Actually, we're probably one of the largest, one of the biggest ag counties, except for maybe Suffolk and whatever, on the eastern part of New York. So it would really help us out a lot. So I have some high hopes for that. We'll get Cornell to buy into it. It should be good. I think it'd be a lot of partners, but benefit a whole lot of people.
You mentioned bricks and mortar, and that's very important, but I've noticed that the CFAs are one on the basis of really strong partnerships. So it's good that you have
lots
all
of
these folks who are saying involved, saying they want to be part of the work there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering about testing for metals, because I know that right now you guys have only the capability of testing the acidity of the soil, or at least, so I'm saying I always have to send things down. I have to tell people to send things to Rutgers.
Right, and that's Cornell. Cornell's not doing it. Cornell has to send them to Rutgers. Rutgers can do it. The thing with metals is you have to know what you want to test for. Because there's just so many metals out there.
Well, I mean, in urban agriculture, the focus is finding lead, zinc, mercury, and what's the other one? Like when you're near train tracks, and creosote, the kinds of things that, you know, when you
arsenic.
There was a lot. For example, my front yard, you know, I had a metal roof on my house for probably 50 years, and so I'm sure that soil was full of heavy metals. So that's not something
we. We can do that for soil, but again, we do send them a record. I don't see this lab as doing that. This would be more of a fruit and vegetable agriculture. Not that that's not part of it, but we do have sources where we can send things out.
Right, that's fine. I was just curious because that would be interesting for students, you know, scientists as well. And of course, all the orchards that we have used a lot of metals over the years. So
a lot of arsenic. Of course, I haven't used it in 50 years, but that doesn't mean it's not there. And I think one of the schools in New Falls, they have problems with that. They take some of the soil out. The good thing is that we know about it.
Yeah.
And then there's always that interpretation that comes back. Mm-hmm. So what happens with the soil samples is, you know, we have folks bag them up and whatever. We send them down to Rutgers, which is a great... New Jersey is a great place to test for that kind of stuff.
They know they're heavy metal.
They've had all kinds of stuff to deal with. And it's another land grant, so it works out really well. And then when it comes back, what our staff does is they go over those reports with whoever the grower is, whoever's interested or whatever, to do interpretation. So we could certainly involve students in doing that. I always wondered why earth science is such a dreaded topic in high school. To me, everybody says earth science, and it was like, oh, wow, that would be great. Oh, you could learn all that. You know, but kind of soils and all kinds of stuff and whatever. But however it's being taught is not engaging folks.
Right.
So maybe we could do something along those lines of help at least provide the schools and the teachers here with some kind of ready-made kits about stuff that you could do with kids to teach them those kinds of things. Because it's incredibly important. You know, people buy houses, never think to have the soil tested, never think about perk tests, never think about, you know, have you looked around? Are you on clay? Are you on sand? I live in Tilson, which is wonderful because we're on sand.
Are you on radon?
Well, radon, what is it, whatever. There's no place in our education system where kids learn those basics.
Yeah.
I think that earth science is where they should learn them, but they don't. And of course, they've thrown out all of the basic things, the home economics and the, you know, the hands-on kinds of things that schools just don't have the time anymore or the money to include those things. So maybe we could work along. That's always been a goal of mine, to work along those lines. I mean, earth science is just take those kids outside, you know. Dig up a foot of land, you know, or have them dig a hole that's 3 feet down. What does that look like? Mm-hmm. And whatever. But that's me. I like that stuff. I just like people don't. So we're working on that. That's kind of a big push for ours, and we'll put it together. The lab's got a whole bunch of ideas, and but we really do need to get it modernized. You know, that equipment is 50 years old, and it's not attractive, you know, to, you know, if you want to bring in PhDs, you know, with a lot of experience and whatever, that's not the place where they're going to go, you know. So hopefully we'll be able to put it together. Mm-hmm. And what I see with the CFAs is they don't want to fund programs as such. They want to fund the stuff that the programs can happen.
Right, of course.
And that's just what this would be,
right.
You know, so...
of course you would work with LEP as you already do. With LEP, they would be fine. They would find
very
useful.
Oh, yes.
I was wondering, we write letters of support for grants too, don't we? I mean, the legislature has affirmed its support for CFAs, so I think it makes a lot of sense at the right time for us to consider.
I'm sure that we would ask that. We're still sort of in that whole formation kind of thing of identifying partners and scope and that kind of thing and whatever. But we'll definitely be...
Okay. Yeah, because you report to us regularly.
Absolutely. So we'll keep you posted about how it's going. But that's it's something that I've wanted to do for a while, but you have to have the planets and stars all align at the... Because it is a huge undertaking, and then once you get it, it takes forever to get the thing going and started. Under which department is it? And we've had some experience with that in the past. You know, even looking at some of the state funding that's come in, are they aware of it? Do they know? And then you have to do all the paperwork and et cetera, et cetera. But for something of this magnitude, it would be worth the investment. It's not worth it for $20,000, but it would be for something like this. So we're pretty excited about that. Our new ag agent started beginning of January from Houston.
This is the urban guy?
Yes, he has an urban gardening background.
What's his name?
His name is Christian...
I think I met him. You came to see the movie that we...
Right, Maldowski. I'm still learning.
He came with his family.
I screened a movie about food access, agricultural, like food deserts and food access. And
you were invited.
Yes.
And he came, and very nice.
Yeah, well, when I got the invitation, I shipped it to him, and I said, I think this would be good. You'll start to meet some of the folks you need to meet and whatever. As a matter of fact, what I'll do is I'll bring him to the next meeting. So you have a chance to meet him and whatever. He's got a very nice way about him. He's got a lot of experience with urban gardening in Houston, which is pretty big. But he also has worked for extension at the University of Florida and also at the University of Wisconsin. He's originally from Pennsylvania, so he's got a great kind of all-around background of all different kinds of things. So he was working with urban gardening and urban ranching in Houston, I guess, folks who are raising animals and whatever. He's a real nice complement to the staff that I have that have backgrounds in small grains and livestock and grapes. We also have fruits and vegetables covered by our participation with the Eastern New York Horticulture Program, which is an extension program that runs from Clinton County on down to Westchester. Most of the folks are doing that particular work or house at the lab, as a matter of fact, which is great, or our office. So it really rounds out the program. And so that part, he's hired, and some of the rest of the staff through LEP money. So we're pretty close with them. We just started our fourth year with them, funding ag in Ulster County, which is really great.
Yeah, that's true.
I need to call them soon. Thanks for the reminder.
And they're interested in urban ag. That's a kind of a not an offshoot of what it is, but a real interest, LEP, in urban gardening. So this was sort of ready-made, you know. And actually, I had the man who heads up LEP sit on the interview committee. So he was particularly interested. I thought that's a really good fit. Moving right along. And our RAP program, Ralch's is Parents Program, we got a big influx in cash from that. I got a call out of the blue last year from State Office of Children and Families to say, you know that grant that you submitted last year that you didn't get? You know, that five-year grant for $100,000 a year? And I said, yeah. Well, we have money for this year. You're still interested. Of course we said yes. So that allowed us to hire another part-time person who is actually doing outreach. And that's always been our problem with that program, is getting the word out to grandparents and relatives who are raising kids that the kind of program that we have is not regulatory. It's not one where you have to declare, you know, income and all this kinds of stuff. We're here just to provide support and education, both for the children who find themselves in that situation and for grandparents and relatives who may or may not have been successful raising their children the first time, and here they are going at it again with probably a whole lot less energy.
I have a lot of constituents in Colonial Village and Water Gardens who fit the description.
Send them to us.
Okay.
Send it to us.
Okay. Or if you have handout material.
We do. I can bring them to the next meeting or
come by or something.
Or I can
start walking around. I mean, I'd rather, you know, somehow have somebody reach them sooner, but I know who
you are. I'll have Jack bring them up to the legislative building and put them in the middle.
Because I'd even be very glad, and I don't want to make it political. This is my constituents. I'm walking around and
that
introducing the person
who ran. I'll send you a bunch of brochures.
Because as you probably know.
Word of mouth is the best way to get these programs going. We've advertised, done newspaper things, put stuff up in laundromats and whatever. But when somebody says, oh, I'm going to this program and it's been really helpful, or they had a lawyer actually talking, whatever, because this is a population that does not want to advertise that they're raising, you know, relatives' children. Either they're afraid they're going to lose them, or it's not, you know, they're worried about the legalities and that kind of stuff. The kids come with a whole host of problems, as you would expect, for kids that are not being raised by their parents. A lot of these kids, their parents are in jail. And again, now they're being raised
or worse, and now
they're being raised by grandparents who are older, tired. I mean, I babysit a lot for my grandkids, but if I had to have them 24/7, I couldn't do it anymore, I don't think. So we really have some high hopes for expanding that program and being able to reach more folks. They've got some great things planned, for kids and whatever. Rest of our stuff is going on. We have two low-income nutrition programs. One is SNAP Ed, which is regional. Although we have an educator in our office who has been spending quite a bit of time with a lot of the local organizations and whatever. And then the other program we have is expanded food and nutrition program. We have two part-time educators working in that. The SNAP program works with food stamp eligible people. The expanded food and nutrition program, both out of the USDA, both teaching the same things, but different programs and different, you know, parameters or whatever. The FNET program is for people at 180% of poverty in families. So, and we do one-on-one cooking demonstrations. It's a six-week course that people have to sign up for, which is tough to get folks there for all six, and then they graduate and whatever. We do pre-test, post-test, and whatever. It's a great program. But the one of the educators just left to go back to school. So,
who's that?
Jamal.
Did you really?
Did yeah. He? Yeah. No, Sage.
Where? Sage.
Sage.
Okay. Great.
So he left.
I saw his movie about Farmingdale.
Yes.
Wow.
He left in the beginning of January, so we're advertising now, and should be hopefully hiring in a in a month or so.
And you, can you remember the name of the person who you hired for the what was it, for the outreach?
For the RAP program, Jack. What's Jack's first name?
You know what? I'll call your office.
Yeah. He's young. This is his first real job. Graduated just recently and whatever, but he's been doing wonderful work. He's got a great telephone presence. I hear him talking to folks and whatever. He's out today. He was out at the Kingston schools talking to that. I guess his mom is a social worker at one of the local Kingston schools, which works out really well. So he's got entree and all kinds of things. But he's really got a nice way about him. He's excited. And the rest of the staff is really happy to have a male presence as well.
We probably know his mom.
Okay?
Maybe. Between you and me, we probably know.
Yeah.
And I know his last name, but I'm blanking on it.
You have a lot of people.
I'll wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning going, oh, of course!
Don't worry about it. And that's
So anyway, things are moving right along. This used to be a real quiet time for Cornell Cooperative Extension. It no longer is. We're in the throes of all kinds of programming. The Ag Fruit School, I think it's next week, which we hold for the region, actually for the state, and that's going to be held at the, is it still the Holiday Inn? Best Western? Used to be the Holiday Inn, now it's Best Western. There'll be 200 growers coming out to that, listening to the latest scientific findings in growing fruit in the Hudson Valley.
What day is that?
I think it's Tuesday and Wednesday. I'll send you the information.
Is there any more room or is it still?
Oh, there's always room. I think there's always room. I'll make myself a note.
Not for me, for Francis.
What's that?
For Francis, my fruit grower.
Okay. Send it to fruit school.
Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay.
Tuesday. Next week.
January. I think it's next week, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. That was very thorough.
He always does a good job. You're going to be a hard act to follow.
Yeah.
I've been around for a really long time, and I've kind of watched things grow and change. When I first started working for Extension, it was 1975, and we were totally funded by state, county, and federal dollars. We didn't do anything with grants and contracts, didn't have to, that's the way. And all of the educational materials we got from the federal government were free. And that's the way the program was structured. And so I've kind of watched that change. And really what they have to look for in an executive director is someone who's quick on their feet.
If you can't get
hung up in the we've always done it that way or this is the way it is or whatever, because it's a constantly changing and evolving program. But I think the information that we have to offer is probably needed now more so than back in the 1800s when they put this thing together. So I have high hopes for it. There's lots of good things to do. It's just a little more difficult trying to find the funding and working with grants and contracts. But, we've got a pretty good system down and whatever, and we do a good job, I think, of training the program folks that come in as to, what to look for, how to make decisions, how to stay in mission, because there's lots of money floating around. But if it's not what we do, and I can't back it with the Cornell resources or other land grant resources, then it's not something we're going to do.
Good. Thank you. Okay. Do we have any old business?
Well, I just wanted to raise the issue just for briefly for discussion, not a long one, regarding the bullying thing.
Okay.
So regarding the whole question of how we, because that's back sort of in our committee's bailiwick now, and I understand that during the break, Mr. Hine and Mr. Ronk set up some meetings with the schools. I think it was actually Cornell, not Hine, and went out and talked with all the schools in the district. And I would really like to interface a little bit more with them, since our committee has, in a sense, charged itself with thinking about not the question related to whether or not cyberbullying law goes through, but more how to supplement it, first of all, with that $10,000 that was detached from the Don't Be a Monster program, so that we could think about potentially innovative and best practices ways of integrating not just anti-cyberbullying, but anti-bullying in with the DASA program, D-A-S-A.
So who do we want to invite to the next meeting?
So just in terms of, first of all, I know Dave would want to be here for the session.
Right.
But I think, so I spoke to Nettie Tomshaw, and she said they can't really help me arrange meetings with the schools the way that they did for the executive's office.
Well, we can invite them to a meeting.
So I'm not sure whether they'll show up, but I feel like it's fine to visit
with that.
I just don't have the resources to be scheduling all these meetings and coordinating all these people. And that's something I would really like to do, is always have a discussion. Maybe what we can do is a roundtable discussion in which, instead of going to each school, we would invite them to a conversation. It might have to be a separate hour, in which the agenda is just very specifically, how can we help integrate the resources that we have.
I also wonder
what
is it Tuesday mornings, I think, the superintendents meet?
Well, that might be a way to do it.
So that might be a way, maybe we could get on their agenda.
Maybe we can get on their agenda and go see them, and that, you know, the, yeah, killing, you know, going obviously to where they are is always better. And killing whatever, seven birds with one stone is
because it would be, they'd all be in one room.
And they have long days, so dragging them out. I mean, I think superintendents and maybe principals, I don't know which principals go to those meetings. But, yeah, starting with superintendents and understanding.
I don't know if any of the principals go, actually.
Yeah, whether there's some kind of group of principals. But I just think getting feedback from them about what they think is working and not working. Obviously, they're not going to say on the record what's working and not working. But at least getting a sense from them about how. You know, I went to visit with the my son's school to look at the Olevos. I always get it wrong. Olevos, O-L-E-W-U-S. The authors of the report that I gave you all about the cost benefit of anti-bullying, who were looking at the significant returns on investment from bullying prevention and education in schools, and how much it diverts children, if there could be some kind of, at least bringing, it's very inexpensive, because really the way it works is they bring in someone who's experienced with the anti-bullying program into the school, and they train the staff, and then the staff goes and works among themselves to carry it out, so, and then there's one follow-up visit, generally speaking, but they have materials, and when I went to speak with my son's school and the a guidance counselor who's been there the longest, she said, yeah, we were trained in that 30 years ago, but nobody uses it now, even though it's considered the best practice in the country. So she took out her binder, and it was like it rain-soaked, you know, with yellow stains on it. And, you know, it's like,
well, maybe we could send out a letter just to see what the schools are doing, like what they are, you know.
Yeah. Well, I sort of know what they're doing.
I'm sure they have some kind of policy,
but I don't think they're all
going on.
I don't know if they're all using it as much as, I mean, even if it were an anonymous survey to find out how effectively they think these how effective they think these programs are. For your information,
you know, I have an 11-year-old, and I see what goes on in the schools, you know, pretty close up. Bailey is the 16th lowest ranked middle school in the state. No, actually, 13th. Miller is 16th. Now, what that means is a lot of it is about lower-income communities and the way that they rank them has to do with testing, and I don't believe it's really fair. I think it's a fine school. But they do have experiences, a lot of experiences with things happening on the playground, and whether it's bullying or just violence. I mean, you know, good old-fashioned violence. No, it's a problem. It's present. And so I...
You know, you might check with BOCES. BOCES hosts meetings of superintendents for all the...
right.
Because I'm thinking if you could find something that they have already.
And the BOCES president, yeah.
That's what you had mentioned.
Yeah.
But BOCES, I think, has a lot.
He's president, I think, of the supervisors. So
yeah.
All right. His name is escaping me right now.
They tend to do a lot of that. So it might be helpful if you went through them to say, are they getting together or are you getting them together or whatever? And
so then to follow up, I'll ask Nettie to just get the background information of Nettie. Who's our committee person? It's really Mary. I'll ask Mary or Nettie. They all help each other out.
This committee is Nettie.
It's Nettie, okay.
Yep.
To just at least, you know, find out who we need to talk to when they meet and see if we can't get on their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
If that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know, I mean, you have a work day job, right?
Yeah.
So do so many of us. And if we show up at their meeting, I don't know whether it means... Since we're not taking anything, a vote action, whether it requires advertising, we're going to their meeting to hear them.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so.
I mean, if there's more than two of us, I think it would. If we were, we're not taking action, so I don't think
it's required. Yeah.
Otherwise, they'd have to advertise it when we go to the conference. Right?
Or anytime we show up at a public thing together, which I mean, most of them probably are advertised anyway, but. I guess we can double check on that. But
so I'll check in with Nettie when they meet and see if we can move forward with that.
Yeah. Because even if we can't all go, we just need the information. Mm-hmm. So the more of us that can, the better. But, you know, if that's not going to work with schedules.
I mean, because the idea is to then propose how we might, in fact, appropriate those funds with... Because from what I understand, it is in our committee to do.
Well, and I do think we probably need to find a way to get a better relationship with the Board of Education.
You mean based on what Mr. Shaughnessy said about...
Well when I was chair of the... let's see, what's the name of it?
That would be a good thing to do anyway.
Because when we, unfortunately, that mental health resolution that we passed for the schools did not go down well. They were not happy. And our report from the Safety Advisory Committee came out 2 days before that started. So we had some recommendations to school, which I hand-delivered, and, you know, they weren't really wanting to hear anything we had to say because they felt like we were trying to tell them what to do and opening up for liability, which I understand. Okay. But
that's a constant concern for them.
But there's, you know, there's certain things I think that are more important than actually your liability when it comes to people's life or death matters. And that's what we're talking about with some of these kids.
Right.
So there has to be a balance. There has to be a balance. And it has to be that we have a good enough relationship that we have the dialogue, whether they do it or not. We just have an open dialogue and we can try to work together, not like, you can't tell me what to do.
You're absolutely right. I think that's the starting point, is just building a better relationship right now with the school district, because when Mr. Shaughnessy spoke at the hearing, and I'm really glad that even though this was a contentious issue, instead of holding it back because we might have disagreed with the law, that we let it go forward to the hearing, because that brought out a lot of differing opinions, and I think people really could hear, you know, what all the sides of the issue. You had LGBTQ Center, you know, all for it. And then you had all these parents of children with LGBTQ, you know, issues, questions, speaking against it. And it was very interesting to see, you know, people who all want
something good to come out of it, but really are questioning the details. And Mr. Shaughnessy on the school board came to speak. Mm-hmm. Well, you were there, right?
Yeah.
And his biggest beef was, why aren't you consulting the schools?
Right.
That's when right. I think the listening tour happened over the break. And right. I really wish I could have been a part of that, but I wasn't told about it.
And see, when we had the Safety Advisory Committee, we asked for a member, for them to have a member join us. They never did.
Right.
They never responded to anything that we tried to include them in. And then they were really annoyed that we came up with any. So it does come down to relationship.
It does come down to relationships.
Yep.
Almost all the time.
Always. Good thing to remember if we want to get something done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, we'll just be banging our heads against the wall and not getting anywhere. Because people will dig in their heels and not listen to what the other person is saying, even if you're both saying the same thing. So, be good.
And I don't know what the protocol is for talking about under new business, about things that are in concern to the whole legislature, but I was just wondering
if we'll open up new business.
I was just wondering if it has to be off the record that we talk about how we feel about the no memorializing resolutions and just talk in
that probably would be more private.
And,
lobbies
and
yeah, probably, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we won't talk
I think
about
so. Any other new business?
Done.
No? Okay. Well, then I have a, do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?